In a world constantly moving forward, remembrance helps us to reflect and realign. Our guest today refused to let one of India's darkest chapters fade out of our collective memory, curating the world's first museum on partition, preserving stories of what was torn apart and what endured. So, Kishwa Desai, you've been a journalist, you've been a historian, you've been an author. What is it that made you switch from journalism to becoming a celebrated author? Your book, Witness the Night, award-winning book. How did you make that transition?
Thank you, Salmanji. I mean, it's wonderful. Firstly, it's an honor to be with you today. I used to be a journalist. Yes, I was also on television for many years as an anchor. I ran a television channel. I did all of that. I was getting concerned that are we moving away from the kind of journalism that I had been brought up to do? So I thought that it's about time one went back to something more serious in terms of when you write a book, for example, you do a lot of research. You have to cross-check every fact. And I wanted to go back to that. And I also wanted to write about this wonderful country that we all belong to. Witness the Night, which got actually accolades from all over the world and was won the Costa First Novel Award in the UK and Ireland, was about gender. It was about female feticide. I belong, Salmanji, to Punjab, which at that time had one of the worst ratios as far as men and women are concerned, especially baby girls who were often killed off at birth. And this is not a new thing. As you know, in India, it has been going on for many. There is a son preference.
This intensity of feeling that you had for the girl child, which is a global concern, and you rightly put your finger on it. Would it be right to say that the similar intensity of feeling you've also shown in your work on the Indian partition, which perhaps is one of the greatest tragedies of the world, the millions of people who were uprooted, became refugees, the slaughtering that happened, the killings that happened, and indeed what would have happened to the girl child in the process of partition, was it a similar intensity of feeling, or was it a different set of thoughts and feelings that you had about partition?
Salmanji, you yourself have a partition story in your own family, and you know how hurtful and hard it has been for many families. I mean, it didn't matter which religion you came from. Many families got divided. You're right. Women were one of the most badly affected. So many were abducted and raped and killed. And shocked me, because both my parents were also the generation that had to leave their homes overnight. They used to live in Lahore. They didn't know each other at that time. My mother was 13 and my dad was in Government College, Lahore. They didn't know, but they had very similar stories, as did so many of their friends, of having to just uproot themselves and leave overnight, having lost everything. My mother's family, my grandfather was a lawyer, and he was doing very well in Lahore, but then they just came away with one small suitcase and four children, and they were like refugees overnight. Of course, he managed to set up his practice, but he never got over it. So I think that was, for me, Salmanji, one of the most worrying things in India, that we tend to keep the worst traumas that we have literally hidden under the carpet. The Partition Museum was set up about 10 years ago, but I had wanted to do this for more than two or three decades before that.
So because you've been with the Partition Museum,
right? I've been thinking about it, yes.
Okay, yeah.
But those days, as you mentioned, I was in journalism. And what happened was that my husband and I, Lord Meghnad Desai and I, had worked very hard to set up the Gandhi statue in London. So when I had first wanted to do the Partition Museum, when I was still a journalist, at that time, everybody dissuaded me. They said, where are you going to find the money? Who's going to agree with you to even set up this museum? No, 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 don't do it. Why do you want to, you know, like unnecessarily go to people who may be in the evening of their lives by now and ask them to remember such a traumatic experience? You cannot do it. But then the Gandhi statue and what we had to do for it in terms of fundraising taught me that now even Indians are willing to give money for a cause they believe in, you know, because so much of the money for the Gandhi statue actually came from India, you know. So we decided, I decided rather, and my husband supported me this time, and the family supported me. They said, go ahead, see if you can manage to raise the funds and do the museum. So I thought maybe the time has come for us to go back to the people again. Let it be a people's museum. Let it belong to everybody, because partition was such a great trauma for the entire country. And having seen the Apartheid Museum, the Holocaust Museum, I have not been to the Hiroshima Memorial, but I believe it's also very moving, been to the 9/11. So, you know, I realize that most countries, you know, preserve these difficult histories. They're called sites of conscience. You go to these museums and then you realize that this must never, ever happen again. Countries, communities, societies should never be divided. So lest we forget. And it was meant to be a museum of love, loss, and longing. That's how we looked at it. Because the generation to which my parents belonged, they were always looking back, whether it is Punjab, whether it is Bangladesh, you know, I mean, Bengal, now and next to Bangladesh, even in Pakistan, there are people who remember their homes when they lived together and they lived in harmony, they lived without this communal strife, they lived in all those kinds of ways before the British brought in the divide and rule policy. And I found an overwhelmingly positive response that before that generation is completely gone, that were really witness to the partition, let us now commemorate them. They were also in their own way freedom fighters.
Let me just ask you, this is very interesting. The number of young people of the Generation Z or Generation Alpha, etc., from our own country, who've been able to come to this museum, and how do you see their reactions and responses?
So I must start with the fact that when we thought of the idea, and that'll answer your question, is that when we started with the whole concept of this museum, and I wanted to explain it to people, Salmanji, remember, I had no money for it. I didn't even have the land. We didn't even have a collection. However, let me say that the first meeting which we had was actually here in Delhi at the India International Center. And I booked that 350-seater auditorium. And when I requested for it, and I said it is something to do with the partition, they said, ma'am, why do you want this? Why don't you take a small room, conference room, in which five people will come. Most of them will be over the age of 90, and they will come and tell you your stories, the stories you want to hear. And why do you want to book a huge auditorium for this? It doesn't make any sense. You will not believe, because we did say we are setting up a museum on the partition of India. The seater, it seats 350, more than 1,500 people showed up. And the important thing is, most of them were in their under the age of 20.
Oh, really?
And so many of them were wanting to become volunteers with us. It was so exciting. You know, for us, it was a reassurance that there is, as you said, Gen Z, Gen Alpha, whatever you want to call them, are so interested in knowing what happened to their grandparents, what happened to their ancestors.
Do you have a counterpart of a museum like this across the border?
You would know as a historian yourself that most of the material pre-1947, therefore the run-up to the partition, lies in the UK. So when I was working in Cambridge, somebody did approach me and said that, you know, we know somebody who would like to set up a similar museum in Pakistan. So would you be interested in, you know, doing something with it? And I said, I can't, because firstly, each country must tell its own story. I'm a great believer in that. Otherwise, what is the difference between the colonizers and us? Told them was that this was the division, the partition of India, but it was the creation of Pakistan. So they have their own narrative to tell. And we should not, have that big brother attitude that we can tell the narratives for everybody all around us and interfere in their own. Because the British did that, Salmanji, for years, and which is what we are still traumatized by. You know, so much of this partition trauma and bloodbath and everything that took place. I would lay at the doorstep of Mountbatten and his corpus.
As a historian, and as a social scientist, would you say that we've now finally closed the chapter that we've suffered of the colonial way of life, the continuing impact of what colonialism did to us? Has that finally now, that chapter, been closed, or are we still struggling with it?
I think we're still struggling with it. I think the Prime Minister had an important point to make when he spoke about Macaulay and the impact. Even now we are speaking in English and we have that kind of, which is not a bad thing. I mean, there are good things and bad things. You have to be evaluated.
And this is Indian English.
So we have to keep that balance. I'm just saying that there were many things that happened during the colonial rule. Remember, there were just a few. It was a huge country being ruled over by the British, but they had also co-opted the Indians into that whole, giving them fancy titles and by, giving them that kind of freedom to rule the country. And they created a civil service, which also was helping them. So I'm saying that the colonial rule, we have inherited certain aspects of it, the civil service, for example, the steel frame and so on and so forth, the educational system, which for many years ran on certain lines, etc., etc. But I'm saying from the historical burden that we had, there wasn't a lot of scrutiny as to what we being taught. And even when I did Jallianwala Bagh, I wrote the book, we had a massive exhibition on it in 1919, and we took it to Birmingham, we took it to London, because I said they need to know that this was what
but
they left
if,
us with.
If you've done that, and presumably there have been good responses to that as well, from what we gather. But the bottom line that remains, have they, as a society, and you've lived there and you obviously are an Indian, as a society, have they figured out they need to admit to a historical wrong, great historical wrong, and that at least keeping in mind what had happened during partition, for instance, should they not be more careful about lecturing to India today about human rights, about rights of women, about rights in terms of ecology, etc.? Is there somewhere in their society a realization that you need to rework all these things out for yourself?
I think there is definitely. There is a change, as I said, which is coming in now in the interpretation of the colonial history. There is a great movement now, even when I started on the Partition Museum. Now there are, plans to teach about partition in more depth, and not just partition, but other atrocities that took place during the British colonial rule, and to open up those archives. I just want to point out one thing, that for even Jallianwala Bagh, there was for many years a censorship. Papers related to Jallianwala Bagh, the cross-examination that took place of the various officers that were supposedly responsible for the massacre and exactly what happened. Now, being British, the wonderful thing is it's extremely detailed. Those archives are amazing, all the cross-examination that takes place of Dyer, O'Dwyer. I mean, they did not redact anything, unlike what's happening now with the Epstein files. Yeah.
Right.
They did not redact anything. Everything is out there for you to read, to be horrified by. But for many years, there was a ban on that being read. I was horrified to see that even Gujranwala, which of course part of India, was bombed. I mean, which country bombs its own, and this is happening in 1919 and we don't know. So because of the censorship, because of the very clever, layered history that the British were feeding us, at that time, we did not know. But I think post-independent India now has every right to know whatever's happened.
But your book itself, Jallianwala Bagh, 1919, The Real Story, now, I read that book and you say that that was the turning point for India's independence movement.
Yeah.
How do our young people see all this today? Your stories, the oral history that you've collected, etc. How do people, the younger generations of our country today, respond to all that?
It's amazing. It's really what this Partition Museum, both in Delhi and in Amritsar, has done. Has opened up a whole area of children looking at their own family histories and trying to understand where their grandparents came from, great-grandparents came from, what exactly happened to them. And what is very, very interesting is that we are now getting books written by these children. You know, I get at least one book every month written by some young child somewhere or a collection of articles which they have put together. And these are kids in school, and they come from everywhere. So the whole museum, I don't know if you've been to it.
I haven't yet, but I promise you after hearing all this, I will go. I promise you that, yeah.
Most of it, all of it, I would say, 80% of it are the stories of people. It's only about what happened to them. And it includes stories about communities helping each other, where a Muslim family helped a Hindu family to escape, a Hindu family helped a Christian family or a Muslim family to, gave them shelter in their own homes. Fabulously. Sometimes it's like out of a movie, when you see things in the Holocaust where people rescued each other. It's the same thing which we have in the museum, only we have many more stories that people can therefore look at. So the children today find this absolutely fascinating.
Do you think, as you see this vast material that you have gone through and you've absorbed, you think that this was preventable? Do you think that this tragedy could have been avoided?
Of course. I mean, there is no doubt in my mind that it could have been avoided. But there was a reason why I think Mountbatten decided to bring the date forward. Firstly, he wanted the accolades of having given independence, not just to one country, but to two countries. He was a bit of a showman, I could say. And, he wanted all the history to remember him as a person who brought peace. But peace at what cost? Because there was no peace after partition. I mean, that trauma went on both sides for many years as a migration went on both sides for many years. And the bloodletting and the killing.
Called the long partition,
and
therefore,
the long
right?
partition. And
yes.
Also, Salmanji, the after effects of it continue till today. I mean, we still have not gotten over it. And the world has not gotten. It's one of the biggest events to impact geopolitics, if you like, in so many ways, So, but to just say that could it have been avoided? If the man had some patience, we don't know, because 1948 was the date, by which time Jinnah would certainly have passed on, because he died a natural death in 1948. He was already a very, very sick man. He was the leader of this. Now, remember, you have a history, I have a history of our parents and grandparents having studied in Pakistan, having those kind of, links with each country. And similarly, people from there having lived here and having a certain fondness in regard. Who's to know? Gandhi was also, sadly, killed. But in 1948, both these events, two you know, very major figures, both of whom in some shape or form were involved in the partition, not responsible. One of them, definitely not Gandhi, who did not want it, but Jinnah did want it. So we have that part of history staring us in the face. He was a very, very ill man. He may have died. And I'm pretty sure the kind of spies that the British had, they would have known his medical history, you know.
So they could have.
They could have.
If they had just been...
Had patience.
And if they'd just been honest, they could have prevented it.
And also, don't forget that the bloodiness of it, even if it had happened, the bloodiness of it could have been prevented. The line itself, when you look at it, it is horrific. How could somebody just come in, Ratcliffe just come in? And within 5 weeks, we have never visited the country. He never even went to many of the places that he was dividing up. He had no ideas. He told Kuldeep Nair in a subsequent interview, I was given outdated maps. I had no idea many of these places were contiguous. And as you know, what happened in Gurdaspur and so on. So, and then there was a lot of pressure that you have to do it because Mountbatten had given this date that we are going to, you know, exit or we are going to have the partition by this such and such date. So in 5 weeks, he partitions a country like India. So where was the preparation? Forget the troops, forget even the army support, but just human lives. He was drawing a line which often went through, you know, villages, half left here, half left there. And those were the stories.
I want to tell you something interesting here, because I know you have so much information about partition. My own family, two brothers, my grandfather, Dr. Zakir Hussain, was vice chancellor of Jamia, working closely with Mahatma Gandhi. And Mahatma Gandhi was a moving spirit for Jamia. Therefore, Jamia is truly a child of partition. And on the other side, in Dhaka, the vice chancellor was his younger brother, Mehmood Hussain, who just stayed on in Dhaka because he was vice chancellor there. There was no formal choice that, you know, I want to be in Pakistan, I want to be in India. The Indian family was in India, and would have been so, and so would have he been if he had remained somewhere here rather than have got a job in Dhaka. So he ends up in Pakistan by being in Dhaka, and the rest of the family ends up in India because that's where they were rooted and that was home for them. And we, as we were growing up as children, never saw that part of the family because there were wars, 65, 71, and therefore there was no question. My grandfather went up the ladder, became president of India. So there was no question ever of ever reaching out to his brother. And his brother, finally, I saw him for the first time on my grandfather's funeral, when after several decades, the younger brother came just to be to pay his last respects to his brother. And that's really about partition in the true sense of how a family, how two brothers have been divided by an artificial line that somebody drew without knowing that he was doing this and that his line would end up making people go asunder in this manner. But then the question is, do we or should we continue to remember partition? And if we do, shall we do it in depression, in anger, in hope? You've just mentioned something about hope. So I want you to underline which is the element that is most important for us to keep in mind.
When you go through that museum, you will find how everything was divided. You know, right from the what we call the Rashtrapati Bhavan now, at that time it was the Viceroy's house, crockery, cutlery, libraries, institutions, museums, even the National Museum at that time, which was in Lahore, you know, that was also divided and things, everything, the Mohenjo-Daro necklace, there was one necklace, so many beads given to India, so many beads given, ridiculous amounts. You had a cultural disruption, Salmanji. That was, I think, a burden that we need to now at some time overcome. That the cultural of language, of art, of craft, of music, so many gharanas, you're a lover of music yourself, you know, so many gharanas were divided.
The cricket team.
The cricket team, which was like, it's in our museum in Amritsar, you know, and we would have had a world-beating cricket team had we never, you know, succumbed to this. So basically, hope. I think what we look back and we say, because the people-to-people contact, no matter what happens at the government level, the people-to-people contact still remained. And we had these lovely narratives about people going back. They were, you know, so well-respected, greeted with love, affection, like, you know, for your family as well. When the lost person comes into the house, he's treated with, you know, warmth and love, because it was not his fault. It was a government and a colonial power that, actually the colonial power that decided this was the only way forward for what they wanted, a peaceful transition of power, which transfer of power, which did not take place.
Which didn't happen.
So I think when you look back in history, you can definitely say this must never happen again. Let's look forward with hope.
That's the terrific thing. Hope associated with partition. Partition that we've all known to be a great tragedy, but the bottom line is hope, and the future is hope. And I think on that, congratulations to you for having done such a great job.
Thank you so much, Salmanji. And through you, I'd like to appeal to everybody who would like to support the museum to do so, and to continue to give us oral histories or any other form of connection that they would like to build with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.